Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with this evening's edition of The Hola Hoax. Well, it's been 2 years since we've been conducting our independent research on World War II, independent, that is, of our Jew-controlled government. What we have found is there were no gas chambers, 6 million Jews did not die in the concentration camps, and Hitler's final solution was a plan to export, deport, relocate, and transport, as opposed to exterminating all of the Jews out of the white man's homelands. The cost of this incredible hoax to the white race has been enormous. Whereas in 1950, white people comprised 20% of the world's population, we now only comprise 8%.
Fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you if you're young at heart. For it's hard, you will find, to be narrow of mind if you're young at heart. You can go to extremes with impossible schemes. You can laugh when your dreams fall apart at the seams. And life gets more exciting with each passing day. And love is either in your heart or on its way. Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth to be young at heart? For as you are, it's much better by far to be young at heart. And if you should survive to 105, look at all you'll derive out of being alive. And here is the best part, you have a head start if you are among the very young at heart. Best part, you have a head start if you are among the very young at heart.
That could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Do 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 shaboom.
Aren't you tired of looking at the television set, listening to beautiful music and seeing lovely white people singing and dancing, getting you almost hypnotized with the beauty of it, only to have a hideous Negro face pop up in front of your face because the Jews have decided that you need to be desensitized to Negroes? Well, I have invented a new product called Negro Recognition Software. You can buy it in your local office supply store for $79.99. Simply place the chip in the back of your television, and presto, your living room becomes a Negro-free environment. You need Negro Recognition Software.
Life would be a dream, sweetheart, hello, hello again. Shaboom, I hope we'll meet again. In our new kingdom, a-lang-a-lang-a-lang. Oh, what was it? Life could be a dream, life could be a dream, sweetheart. ¶¶
every time I look at you, something is on my mind. If you do what I want you to do, baby, we'd be so fine.
Life could be a dream. Shaboom, if I could take you up to paradise up above. Shaboom, you tell me, darling, I'm the only one that you love. Life would be a dream. Sweetheart, hello, hello again. Shaboom, I hope we'll meet again. Shaboom, shaboom. Ya-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Shaboom, shaboom. Ya-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Shaboom, shaboom. Ya-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, shaboom, shaboom.
The Jew wants the races to integrate because the Jew is a mongrel race, primarily Asiatic in nature. This means that the Jew is a very clever, calculating, but not inventive genotype with black blood sufficient to completely strip them of conscience and make them prone to satisfying their desires immediately. The Jew is a very dangerous mongrel. The Jew is jealous of the black race, the yellow race, and the white race because all of the three great races still have genetic integrity. They are still here on the planet as they were created by nature. If you believe that the races should integrate, what you're really voting for is the extermination of the white race because of the recessive nature of the white man's genes. That's why the only solution for the white man is total separation from all of the other races. That does not mean that the white man should necessarily exterminate the black race and the yellow race along with the mongrel races. It may be that there is a God. It may be that the black race and the yellow race have their place on this planet. It may be, as the Hindus say, that we progress through the animal kingdom, up through the lower levels of humanity, to the higher levels of humanity, and then continue our destiny in some way we don't understand. If that is true, then the prohibition in all of the religious texts against race mixing makes sense. Suddenly you realize that the soul is supposed to progress through the animal kingdom to the Negro world, to the Asian world, and finally to the white world, and then up into nirvana. I would think twice before I would exterminate a pure race like the black race or the yellow race, but I see no purpose served by the mongrels. These are children that were produced by race mixing, which is clearly against any religious tenet in any religion throughout history. They are a problem, they're a menace, and these people have to either be exterminated or the mongrelization has to stop. When the House of Israel was taken over by the Assyrians, they were captured by the Assyrians and taken to Babylon, and God warned them not to intermarry with the Assyrians, but they did. And that's why God felt that they had broken their covenant with him, and he abandoned them. He wouldn't have anything more to do with the 12 houses of Israel. Maybe I'm confused. Maybe there were 10 houses of Israel and 3 houses of Judah. But at any rate, the reason that God hated the Israelis, the houses of Israel, was because they race mixed with the Assyrians, and when God came to see how his people were doing, he saw that the faces of the children looked like monsters and he didn't recognize them. He said, "You don't look like me anymore, and I'm hereby not going to be your God anymore because you've obviously sinned." It was only through the life and the teachings of Jesus that the white people could again be gathered under Jesus Christ, whose voice they recognized because he was a white man, and when he preached, they all pricked up their ears and said, "This sounds like God to me." And then they gathered together, and now we have a race, but we have to keep it that way because, again, the Jews are trying to tear us apart, and the blacks are adding their 2 cents, saying that we're supposed to lie down with these beasts and produce Klingon monster children.
the rapture isn't some far-off, distant thing that's going to happen with a bunch of souls rising up to heaven. It's happening right now. The minute you claim your right to be in Valhalla, which is a heavenly place, a real place where no one but white people exist, that is your rapture. You can be in rapture right now. Just stop looking into the face of blacks and browns, and you are there. Hitler tried to bring us there 50 years ago, claiming Germany for God. He stood up against the communists, the Jewish Bolsheviks, who were massacring the white Christians to the tune of 100 million, and he said, you're not going to do it here. I'm going to form the Reich Church, which is an umbrella organization for all of the Protestant churches. The Catholic Church is out because they're molesting their children, and we are going to have our rapture here and now. All we have to do is stop race mixing. Valhalla is simply a place where there is no one but white people. You can have it overnight by driving out the blacks, the browns, and the mongrels, and really obeying the first law of God, which is not to race mix. Look at Jesus Christ, what an interesting character he is. Here is an all-white, platinum blonde man with blue eyes being born in a bunch of sand niggers. No wonder they believed that Jesus was impregnated through Mary by God himself. He seemed to have no genetic connection to his fellow Israelites. But probably Jesus was not a product of a union, or actually even the Christians don't believe that there was a union between God and Mary. They think that God just implanted his own seed in Mary and she was just an incubator, which is why they can claim that Jesus was 100% God, the second Adam, an all-white man, who was described by his friend John as being a man with a white head and hair, white like wool, white as snow, eyes flashing with fire, a voice like many waters, and feet of burnished bronze. That is the description by John, Jesus' very best friend and sidekick, when he started to dream the Revelations vision. And it's an accurate word picture of what Jesus looked like. He was a 100% thoroughbred white man. Jesus was a 100% thoroughbred white man who somehow or other got born in the middle of these brown people, and so people believed that he was a product of God with no genetic connection to the people around him. I think it's fair to say that whites hate blacks. Hate is simply a strong dislike. We don't like them, and we don't have to like them. After all, they don't like us, and they threaten our existence. The Bible was written by white people. You can clearly see that it was written by white people when you read the book of Psalms, for instance. They're almost Shakespearean and ecclesiastics. Sand niggers could never have written the Bible. However, there does seem to be some evidence that the Jews got in control of the government and contracted with white people to write the Bible, who had to write it according to what they were told. But if you read it, you find a very interesting history book, very fractured, but with enough connection to reality to give us a clue as to this conflict between the races. Now, to solve the conflict of the races, take a look at all of the white man's religions. They all lead in the same direction, most notably Hinduism, which teaches that we're supposed to have a caste system on this planet with the Negro at the bottom, the Asian in the middle, and the whites on top. After the soul progresses through the animal and human kingdom, he goes to nirvana. That's exactly the same as what the Bible teaches, which is that if the whites will exclude all but whites and create a strong white race, they will then go to heaven. You have to take that first step. You have to keep the race absolutely pure so that enough spiritual development can take place to go to the next stage in development, which you could call heaven. The white man's religion is his culture. So all of the white religions say the same thing. I don't know about the Celtic religion, I haven't studied it, but I do know that Hinduism and white Christianity say the same thing. The blacks have to stay in their part of the world, which is Africa, Asians can have Asia, and the whites get Europe, North America, and Australia. In order to achieve this nirvanic condition, this Valhalla has to be developed, has to be created. That means that we have to do exactly what our ancestors, your father, your mother, your grandparents told you around your dinner table. You have to exclude the blacks and the browns.
A soldier brave and bold. Katie was a maid with hair of gold. Like an act of fate, Kate was standing at the gate, watching all the boys while on parade. Kate smiled with a twinkle in her eye. Jim said, meet you for by and by. That same night at 8, Jim was at the garden gate, stuttering this song to Katie. Beautiful Katie, you're the only girl that I adore. When the moon shines over the cow shed, I'll be waiting at the kitchen door. Katie, beautiful Katie, you're the only girl that I adore. When the moon shines over the cow shed, I'll be waiting at the kitchen door. Could be just as cute and sweet. That's what Jimmy thought when the wedding ring he bought. Soon he'll go to France, the foe to meet. Jimmy thought he'd like to take a chance, see if he could make the Kaiser dance. Stepping to a tune all about the silvery moon, this is what they'll hear in far off France. Katie, beautiful Katie, you're the only girl that I adore. When the moon shines over the cow shed, I'll be waiting at the kitchen door.
Uppity! Oh. At ease!
Oh, wow.
That was some height.
Look at the fair one.
Some doll.
Who is she?
Why, that's Jimmy's bride.
Jimmy, come on over.
I can't. It's against the rules and regulations.
I'll write it to her.
There'll be sound and taps before he can tell it.
You better come over here, Katie.
All right, I will.
Say, wouldn't Jimmy make a fine officer? I'll bet it took him a long time to propose.
He didn't propose.
Who did?
Why, Katie did.
Oh, Jimmy. Oh, say, can't you get a pass for the night?
Don't know. I'll try.
Company, attention. Forward, guide right. Forward.
Katie, beautiful Katie, you're the only girl that I adore. When the moon shines over the cow shed, I'll be waiting at the kitchen door.
There were no Jews killed during the concentration camp experience over and above what would have been killed by natural causes. We know that by looking at the progression of the population numbers of Jews. In 1940, there were, according to World Jewry, 15 million Jews. In 1945, according to Worldwide Jewry, there were just under 16 million. There were almost 1 million more Jews worldwide between 1940 and 1945. The doubling rate of the world's population and the Jewish population at that time was 50 years. So that, given that there were 15 million Jews in 1940, we know that by 1990, had there been no extermination of the Jews, which there were not, there would be double that amount, which is 30 million Jews. So we know there were 15 million in 1940. The Jews themselves tell us that. If there was no extermination of the Jews, there should have been then 30 million Jews in 1990, which is true. And we can prove that by looking at the geometric curve, which is not a straight line, but a curve that starts slowly at the beginning and accelerates quickly at the end of the curve, so that you have a J curve. That, taking into consideration the J curve, if there were no deaths caused by the Germans to the Jews, there would be just under 16 million Jews in 1945, and that's exactly what there was. White people have to stand up for their right not to have other religions practiced in their homelands, except religions that are ethically based, that recognize that God is love. We do not have to tolerate Satan worship and all of these other religions that sacrifice animals on this altar to this insatiable, lustful God who is pleased at the cries and howls of the sacrificial victims. These are all Satan worship. When you take into consideration the total lack of contribution from the blacks and browns to Western civilization, even the lower class white man becomes a member of the elite worldwide. That's why white power is actually an elitist point of view. White people demand, and this is where the white power comes in, that there be recognition and appreciation for the white man's superior qualities of culture, politeness, manners, creativity, contribution, inventiveness, castles, museums, and churches, proper dress, and proper way of speaking. Any group that tries to bring the white man down to the level of the black or the brown man is not doing the white race any service at all.
Life could be a dream, life could be a dream. Do, 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 shaboom.
Aren't you tired of looking at the television set, listening to beautiful music, and seeing lovely white people singing and dancing, getting you almost hypnotized with the beauty of it, only to have a hideous Negro face pop up in front of your face because the Jews have decided that you need to be desensitized to Negroes? Well, I have invented a new product called Negro Recognition Software. You can buy it in your local office supply store for $79.99. Simply place the chip in the back of your television, and presto, your living room becomes a Negro-free environment. You need Negro Recognition Software.
Life would be a dream, sweetheart, hello, hello again. Shaboom, I hope we'll meet again. In any kingdom, a lang, a lang, a lang. Oh, shit, oh, wow, wow, shit. Life could be a dream, life could be a dream, sweetheart.
Let's talk about reparations for the black people for the suffering they endured at the hands of white people here in America when we brought them over as slaves. Isn't it wonderful that we have international chat so that we can get input from all over the world from our white brothers and sisters about the total absurdity of this idea? After all, did it ever occur to the black people that they have to show damage before they can collect any kind of reparations? Have we in any way damaged one single black man who finds himself on our fair shores today? Their IQ has gone up 15 points because of the race mixing at tremendous cost to the white race. They can now think they're entitled to a white man's society, and yet they're not happy. I say, let's give them reparations in the form of $100,000 for each Negro in exchange for his hated and despised American citizenship and send him back to Africa. I think $100,000 is a good price. After all, it costs us $30,000 per year to keep these people in our prisons. It would be cost effective, actually, to go into our prisons to the 1 million out of our 2 million prisoners who are black. That's right. In America, we have 2 million prisoners, 1 million of whom are black. That's costing us $30 billion per year just to keep these Negroes in our prisons. For $100,000 each, we could cut our losses, offer them $100,000 in exchange for their American citizenship, and send them to Africa. What silly nonsense that the black man says when he says that we have caused his race to be fractured for the last 400 years. Take a look at the 400 years before the white man ever met the black man, and you'll see a truly fractured history. They were already being enslaved by people all over the world, thanks to the worldwide Jewish slave trade, and they were being eaten alive by their own people. They were at the effect of lions, tigers, and bears, and they had no concept of justice whatsoever. They were victims of scarification, clitorectomies, circumcisions, etc., etc., etc. We certainly bettered their lot by bringing them over to our beautiful southern culture. But if they're not happy, and since it's hard to get rid of them because they stick like glue and they're sort of like devil's grass in a beautiful lawn of dichondra, we should cut our losses, offer every prisoner that's a black man $100,000 in exchange for his American citizenship, and send him over to Africa. My idea of sending the 1 million black prisoners to Africa with $100,000 in their pocket is not meant as a joke. It's meant as a reasonable, merciful solution to the black man's problem, which is that he finds himself in a culture where he's not happy. Give him the money he needs to create the black man's perfect world in his spiritual fatherland, Africa. There's no Negro in the world who finds himself in prison at the effect of white man's laws that wouldn't jump at the chance to get out of jail, take $100,000, and go to his spiritual fatherland, Africa. So the problem is not the Negro prisoners who wouldn't cooperate. It's the Negro leaders who, having seen the wonders of white man's society, don't want to give up being in heaven after they've come from hell. But it's not the white man's fault that the black man comes from hell. We didn't make them piss and shit in their rivers and live in mud huts while Europe was building and living in castles, museums, and churches. We did not give them damaged frontal lobes. That's something God did to them, or nature. It's not our fault. Now we've taken them out of the hell of Africa, introduced them to the heaven of Valhalla, and instead of saying, thank you, what can I do to stay here? I love it. They scream, they cause problems, they commit violent crimes, and they demand reparations. The only reasonable solution is to settle this once and for all. Offer every Negro in America $100,000 in exchange for his citizenship and a ticket to go back to Africa. Now, I don't expect the lower class, middle class, or upper class blacks to take me up on this offer today, but the ones in prison, the 1 million blacks in prison, will jump at the chance. That will transplant into Africa 1 million black people who have had the advantage of white society for 400 years. That will set up a nice, healthy colony in Africa sufficient to quell the even more subhuman African savages. Then, after a colony is set up and becomes attractive with condos, roads, an infrastructure, and a military, the lower class of blacks in America will want to go, and that will attract the middle class, and finally the upper class intellectuals will grab at the chance to create a perfect society for black people in the black man's spiritual homeland, Africa.
Sugar and I like tea, but I don't like niggers. No, sirree. There's two known things that'll make me puke. That's a hog eating sloth in a big black spook. You know, cause I show it like a barnyard rooster, I crow it. And the NAACP would sure like to get a hold of nigger hating me. Roses are red and violets are blue, and niggers are black. You know that's true, but they don't mind, cause what the heck? You gotta be black to get a welfare check, and I'm broke. No joke, I ain't got a nickel for a coat, and I ain't black, you see. So Uncle Sam won't help poor nigger hating me. Jigaboo, jigaboo, where are you? I'll be on the woodpile watching you. Jigaboo, jigaboo, come out now, so I'm scared of the white man way down south, you know it. Cause I show it, stick your black head out and I blow it. And the NAACP can't keep you away from a little old nigger hating me. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the blackest of them all?
A man named King, it ain't no doubt, and he's causing lots of trouble with his baboon mouth. The rules
he's a-doing is caused by the trouble he's a-brewing, and the NAACP can't win if a white man's sick with nigger hating me. Hey, Mr. President, what do you say? When are we whites gonna have our day? The niggers had theirs such a long, long time. I'm a white, and it's time that I have mine, you know it. Cause I show it, stick your black head out and I'll blow it. And the NAACP can't win if a white man stick with a nigger hating me.
Nigger hating me. Nigger hating me. Nigger hating me.
We're never leaving, but there's lots of fun still to be had. Welcome.
The world is going to be deprived of the most harrowing horror story it's ever been told when the truth comes out that there were no gas chambers, Mengelian experiments, no Jew skin lampshades, no pure Jew fat soap. And, in fact, even the infamous Auschwitz tattoo has been revealed as nothing more than an IBM number, the functions of which included keeping track of the prisoners' bank accounts. Well, how many of you are interested in the true meaning of the tattooed numbers on the arms of the Jewish prisoners in the concentration camps? Everybody, I'll bet, because it's one of the big mysteries. It's common knowledge that the inmates of the concentration camps at Auschwitz were tattooed with an identification number on their forearm. Well, actually, I've seen one concentration camp inmate in about 1964 when I was applying for an apartment, and this Jewish woman answered the door, and I saw the tattoo on her arm, and it wasn't on her forearm. It was on her shoulder, on the outside of her shoulder. So, but common knowledge is that the identification numbers appear on their forearms. What has not been known until the lawsuit against IBM, which is the modern-day name of the corporation called Hollerith, who provided these huge computers to the concentration camps, is that the numbers on the arms of the concentration camp inmates corresponded to an IBM punch card system. These machines were used in the camps to identify and track prisoners and laborers designed by Hollerith, which later turned into IBM. And because of this, IBM has been sued by our good friends, the Jews, and I'm sorry to say IBM did not stand up to these people and resist. They just shelled out billions of dollars, as every corporation and bank does whenever the Jewish masters knock on their doors and say, "Oh, you are an international corporation, and we are your Jewish masters. Give us a lot of money. And if you don't, we'll tell everybody that you are an anti-Semite, and you will die." And so all these corporations, all these countries like Switzerland, just dole out billions of dollars meekly, and the Jews go on to their next victim. One of the biggest stories about those sadistic, hideous Germans is that they not only took all your hair off so that they could sell it at a high price. That wasn't to get rid of fleas, of course. No. Jews don't have fleas, we know that. So it must have been to steal the hair and sell it at a huge profit. So the first thing they did was shave off your head to humiliate you and sell your hair, and then they tattooed numbers on you for no reason except to humiliate you, because after all, you are about to be exterminated in a gas chamber anyway, right? Wrong. The truth is, the prisoners were being monitored by a computer system, each concentration camp having its own computer about the size of a refrigerator, and the number that was tattooed on your arm was the key to the computer system, which would allow the computer to open up your file, in which would be your racial identity, the church you went to or the mosque, any crimes you'd been convicted of, why you were in the concentration camp. Was it because you were a homosexual, or was it because you were a Jew or a gypsy or a German dissenter? Where you came in the concentration camp, where you were going to be sent to do work, and this is the most important part of all, where your money was. They had to assign you a bank account. The bank account corresponded to the information in the computer, which could be retrieved by plugging in the number that they had tattooed on your arm. So, the number on the arm was to guarantee the Jews that when and if they got released from the concentration camp to which they had been assigned, for having broken the laws of Germany, For example, the racial laws of refusing to leave years after Hitler told him to skedaddle. That was a crime, you see. You were not allowed to be a Jew and be in Germany at the same time. So what they did was they would convict you of this crime and they would send you to the concentration camp. But eventually, you might be released. People got released for different reasons. When you were released, they would look at that number on your arm, and they would plug it into the computer, and they would tell you where your money was. So the number on the arm actually was a guarantee, was insurance to the Jews that their money would not be stolen, just like any other prison system. One of the jobs of the guards of the prison system was to hold on to your personal property, just as if you got arrested today and sent to jail. One of the things that happens when you're being registered is that your personal property is taken away from you and placed in a safe somewhere. Same thing with the Jews in Germany. And so that is the true story of the tattoos on the arms of the inmates in the concentration camps. The information has been revealed by a recent class action suit against IBM, in which it's charged that this huge technology aided and abetted crimes against humanity by providing the punch card systems the Nazis used to catalog and process inmates of the concentration camps during World War II. Alas, there were no gas chambers. Alas, there were no Jewskin lampshades. Alas, we're going to go somewhere else for our grim fairy tales that have titillated us so long and so completely for these last 50 years. The machine, which was kept in all of the concentration camps, or at least the five big ones, Mauthausen, Ravensbrück, Flossenbürg, Buchenwald, and Auschwitz, is known as the Hollerith machine. This was a computer about the size of a refrigerator, and it was used in the concentration camps to identify, classify, categorize, and sort the inmates upon their arrival when they were being registered. Nazi personnel collected information on these punch cards, such as whether someone was Jewish or gay, what skills could be used in their labor camps, and whether a prisoner was healthy enough to work, whether he had been released, was assigned to a different camp, transported on a train, or escape. Another fact that was kept on these punch cards was the residence of the inmate, his marital status, and his bank account, so that when and if he was released after the war, he would be able to go back to the bank account, which was now assigned to him by the Nazis, and get his money. The number tattooed on the arm was the key into the computer system that would allow the prisoners, when they were released, to get their money. The Hollerith, or computer departments, registered the arrival of inmates, the transfer of laborers between camps, and the deaths of prisoners. Hollerith, or IBM's, now known as IBM's method, used cards to store data into which was fed results mechanically. Each card represented a person, and each hole punched on the card was accorded a specific meaning corresponding to occupation, education, health, or some other characteristic. For example, residence, marital status, descent, educational background, and location of bank account. The Gestapo used the Hollerith, which was the name of the company before it became IBM, to process the records of those who entered to register prisoners. This system was in place in Germany as early as 1934 and continued being used by the Germans until at least 1943. So there you have it. The infamous tattoos on the sides of the arms were nothing more than inmate numbers used to get into the computerized data bank, which would allow the prisoners access to their bank accounts after they were released from the camps.
I'd like to play for you my original compilation of classical pieces, which I call Dad and Kids. This is about a man who comes out at evening to call his children in home. They're late, so he's afraid they may be lost, and he becomes very angry. The kids, however, are relatively safe, coming home as usual, singing their little song, and then they hear their dad calling them. They call out to him, And he calls out to them. Overjoyed, they are reunited, praising God for letting the kids come home to Dad safe and sound. The kids are walking through the forest, a little bit afraid because it's getting late. They pray to Santa Lucia to help them find their way home. And while they're praying, they hear their father's voice in the background. And this is what the woman says when her husband brings the children into the house in time for dinner. She's so happy to have such a wonderful husband and such beautiful children. This piece is by Tchaikovsky. This is an allegory I've written to demonstrate the crisis that we're having as a race, with our children being lost to us, and we, the fathers and mothers, trying desperately to find them. If we trust in God, they will certainly be reunited with us. Good Americans can no longer afford to be intimidated by being called racists. It's obviously an appellation used to silence the voice of patriots. What we need to do is let them call us what they may. We need to go down to the border, take our guns, join American Border Patrol, and defend the border ourselves.
After all, our military is busy fighting the war against Israel's enemy, Iraq. We cannot trust the government to protect the sovereign borders of our nation, so we, the people of the United States, are going to have to do it. Look, in a system where you're not allowed to tell the truth about things, where a horrible lie has been perpetrated upon the human race, like that the Jews are not communists, there are no communists in America trying to destroy us, there were gas chambers, and we're fighting a war against Iraq because we want to and not because the Jews want us to. When you have lies of that enormity, the cure is talking, because that's the one way you defeat deceit. And in view of the fact that in Germany you actually go to jail for talking about these forbidden subjects, it actually becomes mandatory on the part of all good-thinking Americans to discuss the very subjects we are told we're not allowed to discuss, like, of course, the Jews. So, life goes on. We continue to tell the truth. We chat amiably. We have fun. And we defeat Satan, the author of all lies. The world is run by the rich. And the world is run by the internationally rich. What we're viewing when we're looking at the enemies to Western civilization are internationally wealthy people who have no allegiance to any particular lifestyle, tradition, culture, or type of civilization. These people are merely run by the desire to amass wealth. They have no affiliation with the flag of St. George, for instance, in England, or the Stars and Stripes in the United States. The last thing they care about is white picket fences, apple pie, and motherhood. They don't understand human bonding. That's why we call them inhuman, satanic monsters. They will destroy America. They will destroy Western civilization. They will destroy everything we believe in, everything we think makes life meaningful, because they have no comprehension of these things. The tiger is not God. That's a stupid misconception developed by sub-Saharan Africans who had no frontal lobes. The tiger is a tiger. But because these stupid savages deified the tiger, and this deification of the tiger passed on to the Jews, and then the Jews invented this truly psychotic god who was not only the tiger, but actually spoke to them out loud, issuing orders to kill this and that people. We now have a people who not only worships the tiger as a god, but believes that this god speaks to them personally and makes promises in exchange for these sacrifices, which amount to whole peoples, whole genotypes. This monster god that these Jews have invented speaks to them and says, go kill all of the Amalekites. Go kill all of the Moabites. Go kill all of these other, the Hittites. And I will reward you by giving you all of the land from the Tigris to the Euphrates. Because I am your God, and you must bow down to me and worship me, and my name is Yahweh, and I'm really, really important. Well, this God of the Jews is not really important. It's just some kind of a developmental, psychotic continuation of deifying the tiger, and we got to put this stupid people down. That's why Jesus was so important. He came and he knocked all the baskets full of sacrificial animals off of the tables in the synagogue, and he pulled the whips out of the hands of the rabbis that they were selling to Jewish men so that they could ritually whip their adolescent male children and younger, because this is a sickening religion. And Jesus said, this is not God. This is not God. The idea of you thinking that this is God shows that you don't have any idea of what God is. God is love. And that's what you have to come to understand. God is not the devil. It's so simple to say and so hard for you to understand. God is not the devil. God is love. White people are very afraid of black people because white people fear above all that they should ever say or do anything that's not entirely gracious and pleasing. What is a white person to do when confronted with the hideous face of a black person leering foolishly and sadistically and sexually at the poor white person, but to have to stifle a horrible reaction of repulsion? That's very frightening to a white person. White people become very, very uncomfortable when they're filled with repulsion and have an obligation because of their social mores to stifle this natural reaction. Naturally, white people don't want to have to be confronted with this constant demand placed on them to hide their true feelings of revulsion. So yes, of course, white people fear black people.
Thank you for listening tonight, ladies and gentlemen, to this evening's edition of The Hola Hoax. Next week, same time, same station.